You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Bird Notice.
What? No, I'm Joe Heath.
You're Joe Heath.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Rassilon of Watchathon.
The Rassilon of Watchathon.
Nailed it. Today, we're going to be talking about the second serial of the 18th season of Doctor Who, Megalos.
That's definitely not one of the options, no.
Megalos consists of four episodes that aired from September 27th, 1980 to October 18th, 1980.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for giving us these episodes.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check out their website at matthewgolden.net.
It's definitely Megalos, by the way.
Megalos?
There's no A.
Megalos, right? Did I say it right?
There's no A.
Megalos.
Okay, you're being silly. I'm moving on.
Megalodon.
No.
So, what's up?
We're recording a podcast?
Yeah.
You mean, like, beyond that?
Yeah.
I don't know, just life keeps happening, I guess.
At a non-stop rate.
Yeah, it's really inconvenient. Like, very annoying.
Oh, yeah, well, your life sounds cooler than mine.
It's not bad. I don't have complaints.
This weekend, I cleaned the whole house and started our Instagram, which you can follow us on Instagram. We're Watch Your Rass on Instagram. Be sure to like and comment and, I don't know, follow us.
Whatever you do on Instagram, Joe doesn't know. He does not use Instagram.
Ram it up, you guys!
And you also had to approve that we weren't a spam bot because our name had ass in it.
I think so, yeah. We are on Instagram. We hope to win the Instagram award, which I believe is called a Grammy.
I'm pretty sure, yes.
Because we're so good at it, despite not knowing any of the terms. But while I was doing all this shit, you were having a ball.
I mean, I was working, actually, but working meant that I was shooting for Unseen World. And I don't want to talk too much about it, because, like, you should watch the episode.
Yeah, but you can tell some behind-the-scenes stuff that's not going to make it into the episode, like your experiences filming it.
Okay, so one of the places that we went to was on the top of a mountain.
Yes.
Which I didn't find out until, like,
she climbed Everest, you guys.
I drove all the way up it, that it's, like, one of the highest mountains in the region. So, like, cool, I drove all the way up that thing.
Almost died.
Oh, I mean, we almost got hit by a truck, yes. That was driving up there. Then once we parked the car, we had to take a shuttle bus further up. And the shuttle bus is not meant for being driven up a mountain. Like, you can tell that when you're in the bus. Also, the windows were down. And the people who were with me, I didn't have a window seat, but the people who were with me, the person who was sitting next to me, did. And they just got smacked in the face numerous times by tree branches on the way up. So, like, this bus is chugging its way up this mountain, and the person driving it is trying to, like, shout trivia about the place that we're going. Like, she doesn't have, like, a speaker, right? It's not like a tour bus where she's like, anyway, if you look over here, you'll see a sheer fucking cliff because we're driving up a mountain, and the other side of the road is just a drop into nothingness. It's not like that. She's just at the front of the bus, and we're at the back of the bus, and she's just shouting things and, like, occasionally getting whipped in the head with tree branches. It was unsettling. But the rest of the trip was really good. We saw some really cool things. We got some very, very good interviews that I'm excited about. I locked my keys in the car on the way back.
Good job.
And we left an hour later because I had to go find a police officer to break into the
rental car.
which my crew was very nice about, because I was like, we were all so tired. And we're like, finally, we're done. We started way early in the morning. It's now in the afternoon. And we got a 5-hour drive back home. And we get to the car, and I'm like, keys are in the car. we have a 5-hour drive home, and now we have this thing where we can't get into the car. But we're very patient, and we got home, and it was fine.
I think the moral of this story is follow us on Instagram at washyourass.
Yeah, I think so.
So you want to talk about Doctor Who?
Please.
Let's dive right into episode one, which I have titled A Prickly Proposition.
Okay.
No reaction to...
Do I have to rank them every time? Like, sometimes they're just fine.
I want, like, you know, validation.
I know you do.
Constantly.
I know you do. It is constant.
Validate me.
It's fine. I mean, here's the thing. Like, it's not, it's never gonna be like, holy shit, man, that's super clever. There's a cactus in it. That's pretty good.
And he gives them a proposition. Yeah. A prickly proposition.
Yeah, it's fine.
Because it's dire, but also, it's a cactus.
No, yeah, it's fine. It's adequate.
It's great, right?
You're not going to get any more than that out of me. I don't know what to tell you. We should move on.
So, the Doctor and Romana work on K-9 because he's still borked. He's still exploded.
They spend...
most of the first episode.
Yeah, longer than I thought they were going to be. Because they're talking about how they're near this other planet. And the Doctor's like, oh yeah, I haven't been there in a while. I'd like to go down and visit. And Romana's like, how about, like, you do one thing at a time? Her exasperation when she's saying this felt very familiar to me as a person with ADHD.
Yeah, because the Doctor says, first things first. And she says yes. And he goes, but not necessarily in that order. And she's just like, it's so exhausting living with this asshole.
I just don't know how many times I've been like, oh, I'm going to do this chore. And then when I'm in the middle of that, I move into like 3 more things. And then I've just made a bigger mess.
3 unfinished projects.
Yes.
I feel you. I do that too, but more with like work projects, like podcasts and stuff.
But like the immediacy with which she is like, no, for the love of God, please don't. You're like, yeah, he's like that for sure.
Now that I'm thinking about it, this episode is a lot of filler. They work on K-9 for a very long time. And then the next thing we get, we go to the planet that they're hovering around. It's Tigella. Tigella, I don't remember which.
Sure.
And we meet these people. Basically, they set up this conflict, and the rest of the episode, whenever it cuts to them, it's just them bickering. That's all it really is. Here's what it is. It's science versus religion. That's their basic conflict. You have the savants who wear these white, futuristic looking things. They're the scientists. They have like a yellow bob or a blonde bob wig.
All of them. All of them have the same blonde bob.
They all look like Prince Valiant.
Their white thing, by the way, has like some great shoulder pads. Things going on.
They look very like 70s future. Yeah. Nowhere in the 80s. Then you have the Dions, who are the more religious people, and they wear purple robes, and they believe in like the dodecahedron is like a thing sent from the heavens.
And I know one of them.
Yeah, she comes up eventually. We'll save her just a little bit.
This is my least favorite part of the podcast.
I know. But we also have one other guy who's sort of in between the two. His name is Zaster. He's the leader of all of them, but he also has to like be like the mediator between the two groups.
You know, like the leader in particular of each group is like always bickering with him. And I think what's really great is it shows like how well he gets along with each of them. Like the religious leader and the scientific leader are like fighting with each other. And then when it's like him one-on-one with like the religious leader, they have such like a nice relationship where like she just like very easily trusts him and stuff. I don't know. I liked that dynamic of like as much as there's this conflict, like it just shows how good he is at his job, I guess. Both sides trust him explicitly, it seems like.
Yeah, and they've been having some troubles because not only are they having this like science versus religious thing, they've been living underground for a while because it's dangerous to live on the surface because of the plants.
Because of the plants. The
lush,
aggressive vegetation. That is the best line reading we've had in a while.
Yeah, Romana says it when she's just like describing how the plants like, and she's worried about it because of the lush, aggressive vegetation. And the doctor's like, I don't remember it.
She just like says every word so very intentionally.
She repeats it too because he's like, I don't think there's a problem. And she's like, well, the book says lush, aggressive vegetation. But yeah, because of this, they can't move to the surface and they're underground and things are like not going well underground. Things are exploding. One guy gets blinded and they put some gauze on his eyeballs. But yeah, the savants have a plan to fix the surface, but they're being blocked by the Deons due to religious reasons.
But what is it called? The dodecahedron?
Yeah.
That's just like the shape that it is, right?
Yeah,
like,
but it's also what they call it.
Yeah, but like a dodecahedron is a... It's a
multi-sided thing.
Is it a polygon? It is a polygon. Is it a hexagon?
It's a dodecahedron.
Yeah, okay, never mind.
I don't know.
It's a 3D hexagon.
Sure.
Dodecahedron.
I don't know.
Okay, anyway, it's not that important. The idea is that it is this artifact that is, like, from before their time, basically. But it, like, powers the whole city. So it's a thing that gives off energy, but they don't fully understand it. That's why the scientists are like, we need to study it. And
we can utilize it to fix.
I mean, it powers everything. We need to understand how it works. And the religious people are like, no.
That's a blasphemy.
Yeah.
The leader of the savants, the scientific people, his name is Diedrix. He's complaining about that disaster. And Zaster's like, all right, I'll go talk to the Deons and see if we can figure something out. And he goes to talk to the Deons, and we meet the leader of the Deons. Her name is Lexa, and she's Barbara fucking Wright.
She's Barbara Wright, and I love her, and I missed her so much, and she's so great. I didn't know, because I don't see faces. She has this great, big, magnificent headdress kind of thing. But like, literally, like, the first frame she appeared on screen, Joe, like, lost his mind.
I did. I was like, oh. I think I said, oh shit.
I think you did. And I was like, what? Who is that? And Joe had to be like, that's Barbara Wright. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. Yay.
She's great in this because she's a great actress, even though her part kind of sucks.
Yeah. And she's not right. Barbara Wright, always right, unless she's
Lexa.
This person.
Lexa, yeah. Also, okay, so she's, the Deons wear the purple robes. Zaster also wears a purple robe, but it's slightly different, and he looks a bit like Skeletor.
Oh yeah, a little bit.
Just wanted to put that out there into your eardrums. So that's what's going on. She's like, I don't want to help them because they think the dodecahedron is a god, and the savants just think it's an artifact, and they bicker about this for the whole serial, really.
Yeah, this is the conflict. It's not going to change much or evolve much. It's this.
So Zaster says he's going to send for an outside person to help mediate in this matter. And that person is the Doctor, because he knows the Doctor.
And this whole time, by the way, I was like, is this a reference to an old... Is this a serial? Should I know who these people are?
No.
No, because they do that so rarely. Make, you know, some sort of reference to an adventure that the Doctor had that you didn't get to see. Or at least they have at this point.
They did it in, was it Face of Evil? Where the Doctor's face is on the side of a mountain.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only one I can think of where they've referenced something that we didn't see. I mean, there's a couple of other, like, little small, like... Oh, I met Shakespeare, or whatever, sort of.
More like throwaway lines, yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, they're still working on K-9, and the K-9 calls the Doctor mistress.
So it still needs some work. Really? He was just...
Seeing into the
future.
Yeah,
too soon.
Too soon. I mean, and they're in a TARDIS, so time's all wibbly-wobbly there anyway. So he was too fixed. There's a joke somewhere.
You think
somewhere.
K-9 is fixed? Yeah.
There's a joke in there somewhere. So then there we go to a planet. That's just a very desert-y planet. And we get a new special effect. The first time this has ever been used, it's called Scene Sync. And what it allows you to do is film with two different cameras and have them move in the same pattern.
Oh, so you can, that's how they did it.
Yeah, you can layer the effect at the same time. With camera movements. So we get some fairly decent CSO. There's a couple of little, like, fuzz bits. But there's this just big thing coming out of the desert. They call it the screens. The screens of Zulfa Thura. And the ship lands. And these basically pirate-looking dudes come out. And they walk. And it, like, looks really good.
This is, like, the first time in a while that I've been like, oh, they just learned a new trick. Good for them.
Yeah, it was the first time this had ever been used. And then it was basically a test. And then they started using it in other shows and stuff as well. And it's called Scene Sync. These pirate people are called Gaztaks. And we meet the leader of them. His name is Grugger. And he has a sort of, like, second in command whose name is Brodadak.
These characters are great and not used to the best of their abilities.
They're doing as much as they can, though. They feel very much like a Robert Holmes comedy duo, but not written by Robert Holmes.
Yeah, it's almost like they were like, no, we're not funny anymore, but we just have this comedy duo in there. And so since they didn't have any, like, funny lines, like, since they didn't have that many jokes, they were like, all right, I'm just going to use the hell out of my face then.
Yeah.
The second in command in particular spends just a lot of time reacting to things in, like, the hammiest way possible.
Speaking of, he reminds me a lot of a guy that was on the Unseen World. What's his name? Keith Holt?
Keith Holt?
Yeah, from the Hillbilly Apple Valley Garden in Toyland. I think I said that right.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, really?
Yeah, they have a very similar vibe. That sort of, like, hammy, over-the-top sort of vibe.
Yeah, I could see that.
And they have a similar facial hair and face. But also, Brodadak, that's the second-in-command guy. That is an anagram for bad actor. They threw that in as a little Easter egg.
Was that something that they did, like, at what point?
I guess in the scripting phase, I don't know. They're like, that'll be funny.
So really, like, that guy got the script and was like, oh, okay, I know what you're asking of me here.
He does, like, a lot of licking his lips and, like, laughing and looking confused.
He's great.
The other guy, Grugger, is not quite as over the top, but does a lot of, like, oh, yes, I understand what's going on, but doesn't.
Which is always a fun character.
They're the Timon and Pumbaa, really, of this serial. Also, they're there, and Brodadak is immediately just complaining about the sand, and he doesn't like sand, and I was just, all I could think of was fucking the Star Wars prequel,
yes.
Where Anakin is like, I don't like sand. That's all I could think of. Anyway, that's not important.
If you don't like sand, you're an evil villain. That's just the rules. I don't make them.
And possibly in a science fiction fantasy epic.
Oh, you're definitely... sand's not real.
Sand isn't real.
You know that, right?
Yeah, it was made up by the government.
No, it's a science fiction trope, sand is.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
What about beaches?
What about beaches?
Are they fake too?
That's not sand, that's just tiny rocks.
What about the desert?
More tiny rocks.
What do you think sand is?
A made up science fictional concept. I don't really know what you're not understanding here.
I'm pretty sure I've seen sand.
No, you're mistaken.
What did I see then?
Tiny rocks.
Okay, what's in an hourglass?
Small rocks.
No, listen.
Yeah.
So it's just a science fiction trope?
Yeah.
Why is it in Days of Our Lives?
They
don't say, like, tiny rocks in the hourglass, so are the days
you
of our lives.
You know, soap operas are basically science fiction, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, you can't even argue that point. We can't spend much more time doing this. I know I started it, but now we have to leave. We have to go.
So, things that don't exist.
The Wire.
The Wire and sand.
And sand.
Okay. If you don't know what we're talking about The Wire not existing, please listen to Burn Noticed Noticed, in which we tell people that The Wire is not a show that actually exists.
It's Joe's new favorite way to mess with friend of the show, Chris Cherry.
By telling him the truth that The Wire doesn't exist.
It's not a real show.
These gas like tanks. Sand. These gas tanks are delivering something to this planet. And it is a person, an earthling, they say. He looks a bit like an Eric Idle character from Monty Python. He's just a dude in a business suit. They brought him and they don't know where they're supposed to deliver him. And this thing rises up in the middle of all these giant screens. And they go inside of it. Bad actor immediately steals something because that's who he is a person. Not realizing that the person that they're delivering this human to is in the room in the background.
It's a cactus!
We don't find that out, like, right away.
No, there's a thing when you enter the room, there's just a shot of the cactus, and you're like, well, that's a cactus.
You're like, that's some set decoration.
That was a choice someone made. And then, like, the person, it just starts talking to them.
I thought it was, like, a computer or something at first, like a voiceover.
And so the Grugger is, like, does, like, a double take and then looks at the cactus, and the cactus is like,
yep, it's me.
Very perceptive. It is. I'm the cactus. Good call. Which is, like, an amazing way to introduce a character. To just, have a prop in the background and just be like, oh yeah, that's me. Why would I be the bear?
That's a reference to a show that no one's watched.
No.
Because I made it. Monsters Anonymous.
But it was occurring to me that that was...
the same gag?
Yes.
But this cactus, his name is Meglos. He's the last survivor of this planet. They used to have the dodecahedron, but then it got taken away and he wants it back. So there's some controversy about Meglos because there's like two different theories.
Okay.
And one of them is less a theory because it was put in the novelization, I think by Terrence Dix, that his race of people were all cactuses.
Yes.
But there is another theory that because we find out that Megalos is a shapeshifter, he turned into a cactus to survive in this desert environment.
Ah.
And he's been stuck here for like thousands of years.
As a cactus.
And that's why it's hard for him to like switch into other people. And like sometimes like we'll see him as people, but he's got the like cactus skin.
Which is great, great makeup design. And also made me wonder, is he supposed to be like related in any way to the cactus people in New Who?
There are cactus people in New Who?
That's racist. Mary calls them cacti, and they're like, that's racist.
I don't remember. That's racist! You know, I don't know. Maybe. Maybe that's related, though. I don't know.
His delivery of that's racist was way more severe than I remember.
Anyway, he wants the gas tax to steal the dodecahedron for him and bring it back. But he also needs their help to do a thing. He explains what it is off screen, because we cut to some more squabbling. And then we come back and he's like, so you got it? And they're like, yeah. So they put the cactus into a compartment. And they put the earthling, the businessman, into a compartment beside him. And then some glass thing comes down. They're locked inside. And then, like, instead of pressing the button to do whatever the process is, Grugger's like, nah, we're just gonna leave him in there and steal all his shit. And Rodatak is like, oh, okay, cool. And then, like, he's like, where'd the men go? Go get the men. And he, like, tries to leave and he can't because the door is shut.
The cactus is like, yeah, I kind of figured you might do that. And then they actually have to help him. Can we talk about the human, the earthling that he's, like, going to, like, fuse with? John Mulaney has a bit about how people don't expect him to have, like, bit into drugs. And the thing that they expect out of him is that he just spent, like, the last 100 years in a room eating crackers. That's what this guy looks like, but times 10. He was in that room with John Mulaney eating crackers.
It's that Eric Idle character from Monty Python. It's the same vibe.
Yeah.
Just someone who likes to talk about taxes. So they turn the machine on, though, and the cactus scrunches up, deflates.
It's gross. It genuinely disturbed me a little bit. Like, because it takes so long to happen, and it keeps getting, like, more and more scrunched up and deflated.
Well, it cuts to, like, reaction shots of Grugger and Brodadak, like, oh, huh?
Yep, those were the faces.
And then the earthling gets all green and bumpy.
He's a cactus person. Good makeup. I like it.
The doors open. He immediately runs out and like starts like taking charge now that he's got a body. And he's like, da 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 da. I've intercepted a message from the planet. And they're looking for this guy named the Doctor. So we need to stop him. And then he like finds out where the Doctor's at. He like looks him up. He finds out all about the Doctor. And finds the TARDIS hovering around the planet. We cut to a scene inside the TARDIS where the Doctor, he's got like an apron on, he throws it on the floor, he's walking around talking to Romana, and she's like, I can't fix K-9, and then he trips over his apron that he left on the floor, and then she giggles at him, and then he's like, well, just wag his tail, maybe that'll fix it, and she's like, oh, I tried everything else, and she wags his tail, and then K-9 says, everything's fixed, I'm fixed, great, you know, they have a little bit more conversation, and then we see that scene again.
Yeah, this is not the first time they've done it where they've, like, done a time loop. There's no, like, effect or sound or anything. They just cut, play it again. And so you're kind of like, is that what's happening?
I knew it wasn't the same exact thing because they put music under it that's different.
Oh.
It is a slight audio cue. Also, when it starts with K-9 malfunctioning. It makes a ksh noise. So every time it does loop back, you do hear a ksh, and then the scene plays. There's a little bit of thought put into it, so it's not as jarring.
I gotcha.
Because, like, when it loops, there's, like, ominous music underneath it that wasn't there the first time.
I do like that the loop starts with her going, oh no, not this again.
That's real clever.
Yeah, that's just good writing.
And we find out that Megalos has put them in a... He doesn't call it a time loop. He calls it a cristasis... Chronic... It's a bad time.
You're about to have a bad time.
And the Doctor pretty much immediately, because they have a small section of time after the loop that they're not in the loop, and that before they go back to the loop.
Yeah, there's just a little bit at the end where they know what's happening.
And the Doctor pretty much immediately figures out that they're in this weird thing, but they don't, there's like no way to get out of it.
They specifically, like, they know what it is that they're in, and they know that no one's ever gotten out of it before. But it's okay, because they're both real smart. So they just technobabble their way out of that thing.
In episode 2, though, Megalos is like, I put him in a loop. And he's like looking at the screen and he's like, and they're like, well, the doctor won't be making it to that planet now. And he's like, oh, yes, he will. Megalos turns around and he's the doctor.
Oh, my gosh. This is fun. It's fun when you have a doctor who gets to play another character, an evil character, and there's no brown face involved. That's fun.
That's the end of episode 1. We're now into episode 2, which I've called Cack Time Lord.
Okay, see, that's pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Cack Time Lord.
I already gave you your validation. Please do not come back for seconds. The store is closed. Thank you.
Don't leave me hanging.
So.
Don't leave me hanging.
They are stuck
don't
in a loop.
Live.
The gas.
Ow. Thanks for the fist bump. Oh. That was a real good title I gave it. You're right. Thank you. So what were you saying? So they leave with Megalos.
Yes.
Megalos doctor. And they're making their way to Tygella or Tygella. I don't remember which. Meanwhile, Lexa and Zastra are having a chat. And she says that, yes, the doctor can see the dodecahedron, but he has to swear an oath first.
To their god.
And Zastra's like, well, that's ridiculous.
That would be rude to ask our guests. Which when he ends up sort of relenting and letting this happen. And when he's talking to who he thinks is a doctor, that's what he has to do. He's like, ah. It's just a formality. Don't worry about it too much. Don't stress about it. I don't know. I like this guy.
Sasser, yeah.
Yeah.
So Megalos gets there. He heads to the city. Leaves the gas tanks on their ship. He says, just stay here. Oh, while he's leaving, though, Brodadak's like, he's pretty great. Man, I like his coat. And this sets up a thing.
He loves the doctor's coat so much. He talks about it most of the serial.
Which, how did the coat...
Right. What I don't understand is the clothes. So he was a cactus, and then he fused with a person, and then he shapeshifted into the doctor. But it's not like the clothes are a part of him physically, because he does take the coat off. So I can't think about it too much.
Question, if that's the case, why didn't he just shapeshift into somebody who was holding the dodecahedron?
What do you mean?
Then he would have a copy of the dodecahedron.
Well, the dodecahedron was really big. He shrinks it down later.
I mean, just shapeshift into somebody who's touching the dodecahedron.
I don't even know how that works.
I mean, he can clearly create objects by shapeshifting.
We have to move on. This is hurting my head.
Okay, so he arrives at the city. He's really creepy. Also, I read something, somebody pointed out that the way he introduces himself is just not how the doctor would introduce himself. He starts by saying, I'm a Time Lord.
Yes.
I'm the doctor. And the doctor would never introduce himself by stating he's a Time Lord.
Yeah, it's not something he loves talking about.
He's like, I'm a Time Lord. I'm the doctor. I'm expected. And then, like, he's very, like, straightforward, but also looks kind of, like, nervous. Because he bumps into Zastra, and Zastra immediately recognizes him, and he's like, oh yes, Zastra, of course I remember you.
I know you. It's like me talking to people in the grocery store.
The power things are happening. He's like, well, take me to the dodecahedron. And he's like, well, you know where it is. And he's like, yes, but now that you're the leader, you should lead the way. And then that's when Lexa is like, you gotta swear the oath. And he's like, I would love to swear the oath. I have no problem with that whatsoever. But, like, there's a second there where he's, like, very nervous. I don't know why.
Yeah, me either. There's, like, a question of, like, what does it mean? Like, does it actually have any meaning to swear the oath? Like, does he have to do something?
Right.
Does he have responsibilities now or no?
I mean, we made some religious vows when we got married and we didn't mean a word of them.
Nope. That's between me and God and no one else.
And now the listeners of this podcast... So, the doctor and Romana stuck in this loop, and they figured a way out of it. They have to trick the loop. They gotta throw it out of sync.
By doing what they were doing in the loop before the loop starts over.
Mm-hmm.
The part I can't explain is how this works. Like, the loop itself got confused.
It's just magic. It's magic science.
That's just how science works.
So they recreate the loop. The doctor almost fucks it up.
Because he can't remember his line. Romana's, like, trying to feed him his lines.
Like, mouthing it to him.
That's really good. It's always really good to see actors, like, pretend to be bad actors.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, they're doing it again and they're giving their lines, like, very wooden and stuff.
And then they do it. They trick the loop and they're out of it. And the doctor is like, For a second there, I was afraid you had forgotten your lines. And Romana makes yet another great face. This is the serial of Romana making great faces.
That's true.
I'm just being annoyed at the doctor. So then Meglos does the oath and then's like, all right, cool. I need to go look at the dodecahedron. Only I can go in there. It's dangerous for everyone else because you could all die and I won't die because I've existed in the future because of time. I'm a Time Lord.
And literally the reaction to that is like, that doesn't sound right, but I don't know enough about Time Lords to say. Like, that's the reaction that everybody has to that statement.
Yeah, it's the reaction I had to that statement. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. He goes in to the dodecahedron, and he puts a thing on it. It's actually the thing that Brodadak stole when he first went into his ship. And then Megalos was like, hey, I see you. Put it back. But what it basically does, we don't find out the effects of it for a while, but what it does is it shrinks the dodecahedron into a convenient carrying size. Because it's huge.
Yeah, it makes it bite-sized.
Because, like, it's, like, bigger than a person. It's big.
Like a Reese's Pieces.
It's the Reese's Pieces.
Yeah, the dodecahedron is a peanut butter pieces. Cup. You know it's Reese's Pieces, and you know that it's not Reese's Pieces. And I know you're only saying Reese's Pieces to upset me. Please.
But yes, it's the Reese's Pieces version please of stop. Reese's Cupsies.
Everyone, please listen. It is a Reese's Cup, and it is a Reese's. What is a Pieces? A pieces is nothing. That's not a word.
Oh, is it Reese's Pisses?
You're a Reese's Pisses.
Reese's.
If I pieces. Seem unnaturally mad about this, just know that I used to work at a movie theater, and so I've been holding on to this anger for a long time.
I have the same feeling about people who ordered Crunch a Bunch.
Crunch a Bunch.
Crunch a Bunch.
Yeah, that's bad.
It's Bunch of Crunch.
I've had people order a Coke, and then you savages. Get them a Coke, and then they're like, "Oh, I wanted Sprite. I wanted Sprite flavored Coke."
That's the South, my love.
I don't like it here. It's soda. I'm done yelling about the way things are pronounced.
Dr. Pepper is my favorite Coke.
Stop. You've got to stop.
You know what they should make? They should make a Reese's Pieces Coke.
Okay.
Flavored Coke.
No.
Reese's Cokesies.
Okay. Please let us move on. Please.
All right. The TARDIS finally arrives on the planet. Romana's outfit is fucking amazing. She's changed. She's got like this red and white. I don't know. She looks like a 70s rock star. It's got like ruffles on the edges. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. It is a very good outfit. She does. She does look like she's about to give a concert.
Like she looks like she's about to do a David Bowie tribute concert. That's really cool. Really good. The doctor sets up a joke here that I didn't catch until I made the gifs. Because he starts to head off in the wrong direction and Romana has to point like this way, which happens a lot. And then he says something and like blames it on the
anti-clockwise rotation of the planet.
Romana gets attacked by some plant that the doctor and K-9 just don't notice and just walk off without her. How would you describe the plants?
They have a name. They're like a big bell
plant.
Plants. Yep. So yeah, they're kind of like some Mario guys. Those have names too, don't they? The specific plant guys in Mario. Plant Piranha.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Sure.
You're the Mario guy.
I don't know the names of everything.
All right.
I know a Goomba.
Can you say Goomba again?
Goomba.
Okay. They're bell plants that eat you. That's the important thing.
Yeah. This felt to me very much like that weird plant in Nightmare of Eden. Very much like the oysters in Genesis of the Daleks.
Oh, the oysters.
It's just not that important. And also, if this is the only thing that's keeping people from living on the planet, like, it's only in one small section.
Lush, aggressive vegetation.
I wouldn't say it doesn't appear to be that lush.
They actually just are aggressively trying to sell you shampoo bars. I've never been inside a Lush store. Just throwing that out there.
It took me a while to get that joke you were making.
I don't even think there... Is there a Lush, like, anywhere nearby us?
There might be one at the mall. I don't know.
Huh. Okay.
I mean, I worked at the mall and couldn't tell you what's there, so... Lexa and one of the savants, her name's Karis, see the doctor in quotes, leave the dodecahedron room, and then they go check it out and see that the dodecahedron is missing, and they're like, oh shit, doctor has stolen the dodecahedron. We need to stop him.
Yes, so they close down the city, basically, so that they can find the doctor. But it's not the doctor.
They don't close it fast enough, though, because the doctor does show up and says, hello, I'm the doctor. I'm expected. And then the guard's like, he's like, I remember you. And he's like, wow, that was weird. I was here 50 years ago.
Good memory.
And he's like, anyway, me and my assistant oh shit, where is she? And he sends K-9 to go find her. Which, by the way, they fixed K-9, but his battery's goofed up, and he'll only have
my cell phone. Like, when I first got it, it had a great battery. Then I used the fast charger too many times when you're not supposed to use the fast charger, and it only has, like, half the battery capacity it's supposed to. That's what K-9 is like right now.
Yeah, he's got, like, a 2-hour battery life. Romana gets away from the plant and sees some burnt leaves and is like, what's this mean? I hope I'll find out in a later scene. She does. Meglos overhears that they're looking for him before they, like, just put out the main call, because they have to go tell Zaster and all that shit. And he goes to hide, and he turns into the cactus version of the Doctor. So he looks like the Doctor, but he's got the cactus skin now, I guess, to differentiate him from the actual Doctor. The Doctor walks into the main part of the city and is like, hey, I'm trying to find people. Can you tell them I'm here? I'm expected. And then, like, over the speakers, it's like, arrest the Doctor. Everybody comes in, and everybody is confused. They're like, you stole the thing. And he's like, what are you talking about? I just got here. And no one knows what's happening. And it's pretty fun. And then they carry him away like a couple of guards do. And then Romana, meanwhile, bumps into the gas tax ship. She finds the gas tax ship.
Every time you say, I keep hearing gas tax. Every time.
Gas tax. G-A-Z-T-A-K.
You know, the gas tax. Those ruthful space pirates, the gas tax.
And she realizes that the burnt leaves must be from that ship landing. Like, when they landed, it burnt the leaves or something? I don't know. She bumps into Brodadak, and she's like, oh, hi, I'm here. And then, like, he immediately tries to attack her, and they all chase Romana. K-9 almost gets there, but runs out of battery. Runs very low on battery.
Has to return.
Romana is surrounded by these gas tacks, and Brodadak orders her to be killed. And that is the cliffhanger. That's the end of episode 2, and we are now into episode 3, which I have called Go Get the Hedron.
I like that one, too.
Thank you. Because it rhymes with dodecahedron.
Yep. Why can't you just take the compliment?
I don't know. Because I want more than just validation. I want you to tell me why it's great.
But you know. You know. I know. We don't got to spend time breaking it down. That ruins it. You know what's great about jokes?
What?
When you explain them. That's my favorite part.
Yeah?
No!
Oh. I'm confused. Do you want me to explain? It's because it's go get the hedron. Okay, they're about to kill Romana, but then Grugger says, no, that'd be bad, let's question her first, and wants Romana to take them to her ship, how she got to this planet. And she's like, all right, fine. And then Romana takes them for a while, and then leads them right back to their ship. And she's eventually she pulls the same line that the Doctor used, which is, she forgot to take into account the anti-clockwise rotation of the planet. And the pirates just buy that.
Yes.
Because they dumb.
Basically, what she ends up doing is tracking them through back to where the man-eating bell plants are, mm-hmm. pushing them in and running.
The Doctor...
I like what you have called him.
Yeah, he started to realize that there is a Doppeldoctor.
A Doppeldoctor.
The Doppeldoctor, by the way, has a very creepy scene in which the Earthling that's in his body
tries to get out. Oh, it's horrible. He's, like, talking to him and, like, pulling him back. Like, the way that it's done, I guess, is, like, an overlay or something?
I mean, yeah. It's just, they just put two shots together.
Okay, but I hate it. He's, like, pulling him back into the body and, like, talking to him. He's like, no, no, no. Don't try and get away. I still need you. And, like, I don't know. It's messed up. It messed me up real bad. I did not care for it.
And once he gets him back in his body, he grabs one of the savants, Karis. He grabs her and presumably shows her the dodecahedron, because he just shows her something in his hands and then, like, gets her to work with him. He's like, look what I did. I got power. And I have this thing. Do what I say. So, also, they've had, like, this critical power drain, and stuff is going really bad.
Well, the critical power drain is because the dodecahedron powers everything.
So, the Doctor convinces Zaster to let him help, even though he's under suspicion of stealing the dodecahedron, and he makes a joke that says, many hands will make the lights work.
I like it.
It's good. Lexa, meanwhile, has declared that the gods took the dodecahedron back, and this is all part of their plan. It's all because of the vast amount of non-believers, and all non-believers will be exiled to the surface of the planet, including Zaster. And her and the Dion sort of take over.
Yeah, it's messed up.
And they also say that the doctor will bring back the dodecahedron, but they have to sacrifice him in order for the gods to return the dodecahedron. Tramana led the gas tax to the plants. She runs off. She finds K-9 and carries him to inside the city just as the city gates, like, shut down. So she's inside, but she's, like, in, like, an in-between room.
Yeah, you know how the I don't know why the first thing that comes to my mind that's like this is the butterfly house. But you got the double set of doors, and you come into the one set, and they gotta make sure those doors are closed before the doors into the butterfly's house that opens up, because they don't want any butterflies getting out. It's like that. It's like the butterfly house.
So she's in this, like, decontamination area. It's not decontamination, but that's what I think. I don't think butterfly, I think, where they, like, shoot you with all the, like, in sci-fi movies.
Yeah.
But she's in there, and the gas tanks get away from the plants, and they're trying to break in after her. And she's trying to break into the city. They eventually do break it. And then they get, like, a big tree and are, like, ramming it like a...
It's a ram.
Like a ram, yeah.
A ram is the noun, actually, that you were searching for.
They ram it like a ram. And they break in and they have a bit of a shootout with...
Like the guard.
The guards, yeah. I think K-9 completely powers down at this point, too. Oh, and then the Earthling tries to escape his body again, Megalos's body again, and because of this distraction, Karis pulls a gun on Megalos, and she's leading him around now. She's taking him hostage or whatever. But during this whole, like, kerfluffle with the shootout, Romana runs away, sees Karis pointing a gun at who she thinks is the doctor, and she knocks out Karis, and the doctor, or Megalos, gets away. And the aftermath of the shootout, a thing happened that made Tony so angry, and we have since been told this is the only reason.
He asked to do it!
The guy who plays Grugger said he would not do this serial unless he could do what he does in this scene.
He kicks K-9! He wouldn't be on Doctor Who unless he got to kick K-9! What kind of messed up shit is that?
Yes.
Why did he want to kick the dog?
Because he didn't like the dog.
First of all, no one should be mean to my dog.
You know what I think is funny? I think he also plays a character in K-9 and Company.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if he kicks the dog in that one. You were so angry.
I get very upset anytime anything happens to K-9. He's a good boy, and he doesn't deserve it.
So Megalos gets out, gets to the gas tax, and they leave. Romana and Karis is like, what did you do? That wasn't the doctor. He was like some weird plant thing. And then they team up to try to find the real doctor.
Which is nice. There's like a significant portion of time where it's just these two women who are talking on screen. Hey, thanks.
Matt? No. I can't hear you say hey, thanks without Matt being followed up by with it. They're going to go find the doctor and they don't know where he is. And that's because he is strapped to a table and they are going to drop a big rock on him.
Yeah.
They got like ropes tied to the rock and they're like burning the ropes very slowly. It's a whole big ordeal.
It's held up by three different ropes and each rope is like individually getting torched. Lowers each time.
And the doctor's like, no. Ah. And that's the end of episode 3. And we are now into episode 4, the final episode, which I have called Apply Two Coats.
That's the worst one so far. Apply Two Coats.
Do you mean the worst by it's the best?
Maybe.
You've laughed at that one. So, Romana and Karis team up with Zaster and Diedrix to stop the sacrifice. And they explain to Lexa about Megalos. And she's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Grugger's real annoyed that he lost some men on the planet during the shootout. But Megalos is like, don't worry, we got the dodecahedron. You'll get your revenge. I'm pretty awesome. We're all pretty awesome. We're buds now.
I'm a cactus.
And then Karis tells the doctor and Romana that Megalos, because she was like being talked at evilly by Megalos, and she says that he mentioned that he wanted to take the dodecahedron to Zolfathura, and then they're like, oh right, there's these screens there that could amplify the power of the dodecahedron.
And it's already like super powerful. Like one of the things that Megalos was saying was that the dodecahedron powers this entire civilization, and they're only using a fraction of it.
So they get to the planet. Megalos buries the dodecahedron in the sand above where his little center is, and it like rises and it's like now powering his little area there. While he's doing that, Brodadak again reestablishes. Whew! Just love that coat. Man, I want that coat. That coat is great. To be fair, it is pretty good.
It is a good coat, yes.
So the doctor and Roman are going to goats is Ulfathura. And then one of the Gaztaks that you think is dead isn't dead. Quite so dead. He tries to shoot Romana, and then I guess Lexa jumps in the way and sacrifices herself for Romana.
Yes. I don't know why you're being so sketchy about it. That is what happened.
That is what happened, but like when it happened, I was like, what happened?
Were you taking notes?
No, I don't think so. I think it was just like I didn't see a shot of her like jumping in the way. I just saw her getting shot. And then it wasn't late until later that they're like, she jumped in the way. And I was like, oh, did she? I just thought the guy shot Lexa.
No.
But no, she was, like, doing a nice thing. And I guess that was supposed to be, like, a character moment. Like
redemption.
But, like,
yeah.
5 seconds ago, she was going to drop a giant-ass rock on the doctor.
Right.
So, eh. And then they're like, oh, well, that was real nice of her. Anyway, we're leaving. Like, it's not that, like, it doesn't work emotionally.
No.
Honestly, I feel like a lot of this, like, the stuff with the cactus works, but everything with this, like, science versus religion stuff is kind of just there, and they don't really do anything with it.
Yeah, no, they don't at all. It feels very, I don't, like somebody trying to make an observation that they can't, they don't actually have any, like, feelings to back it up.
Right.
Where it's like, I'm going to talk about science versus religion, because that's what people do, not because I have anything interesting to say about it.
Right. Though I will say it's a little interesting that I don't think the religious aspect is thoroughly, like, shut down like it normally would be.
You yes, know what I mean? It is. Like, they try to kill, like, nothing that the religious side does makes any sense.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
They won't let anyone study the dodecahedron. It is just an artifact. They try to kill the doctor. Like,
okay, it is an artifact, but it is kind of, like, we don't know what its, like, powers are or where they came from, do we?
It came from that other planet. It is
kind of magical still.
It came from that other planet.
But, I mean, we don't know how it originated on that planet.
I assume the people there made it. Like, there's no point where it's like, actually, yeah, this is a little bit religious. Like, there's no point in the serial where that happens. Everything that the religious people do is stupid, and then they die. Like,
that's true. But, like, I don't know, Zaster's real nice to him and stuff. And, like, it's not as antagonistic towards them as I normally would expect in a serial like this. You know what I mean?
Well, the doctor's not openly antagonistic towards them. Is that what you mean?
I mean, no one's is except for the one guy from the savants.
No, everyone from that side is. But all the savants are antagonistic. There's, like, a whole scene where, like...
Well, I mean, Karis and Lexa sort of teamed up at one point, and Karis is from the savants.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. She's not as, like, hammily evil as I've seen before. And that could just be because I love Barbara Wright, and I'm... Jacqueline Hill.
She does, like, excommunicate half the fucking community to die on the surface of the planet at the hands of lush, aggressive vegetation.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Like, she's pretty bad.
I don't want her to be bad.
Because it's Barbara Wright?
Yeah, she's dead now anyway. So the screens magnify the power of the dodecahedron, and they can take out a planet with it. And Grugger's like, well, let's take out Tigella, because they just killed some of my men. Because
fuck those guys.
The TARDIS arrives, and they're like, well, let's go stop them. And the doctor's like, only I'm gonna go. And they're like, why? He's like, because he's impersonating me, which means I can impersonate him.
No.
Oh, that's actually pretty good. Then inside, Megalos is like, I gotta go adjust some things. I'll be right back. And he takes his coat off, and, like, Brododak's like, oh, yeah. Brododak is very excited. He gets the coat, puts it on, and he's very happy.
I like that, like, that scene is just him being like, do you think he'd give me the coat? And, like, the guy's like, I mean, I don't know, he's done with it. I don't know. So he's like, can I get the coat? And Megalos is like, yeah, sure, man, why not? Like, that's the scene. Megalos is like, yeah, you did a good enough job. Here's this coat that might...
I honestly don't give a shit.
...also be part of my body? I don't know. Have you ever seen that episode of SpongeBob with, like, the sea cucumber?
No, I've never seen SpongeBob.
He's like a jerk. He's mean to SpongeBob. And they take his crown and give it to SpongeBob. And later he's like, that wasn't a crown. That was just part of my body. That's what I think this coat is.
So the doctor sees Megalos leave the ship, and he sees that he's not wearing the coat. And he's like, ah, sleeves. And he takes his coat off, puts it down. He almost gets caught. And he, like, puts his hands up against the screen. And then he realizes that they think he's Megalos. And he's like, This screen seems to be tilting a little bit. Can you hold this up for me?
Also, can I say, as much as, like, it's, like, a thing in this serial, how great that coat is, the, like, vest sleeves look is very good.
It's maybe a little bit better than the coat.
It's maybe a little bit better than the coat, yes.
I never realized how lanky he is.
A bit.
Because he's got the coat on, it hides, like, you know, his body type, I guess. So when he takes it off and I'm like, man, you're like a gangly motherfucker. Like, look at them spindly arms, you know what I mean? I didn't realize he was as thin as he was, because he's usually wearing this big frumpy coat.
It's not frumpy.
It's heavy. It's big.
Yeah.
So the doctor goes in, pretends to be Megalos, points at Brodadak and goes, coat looks great on you. And then he's sort of like BSing his way to try to figure out what's going on. He's messing with switches and stuff. And then another Gastak has found the coat the doctor left outside and brings it in. And then there's two coats. And they're like, what's up with that? And then the doctor's like, oh, it's for you, Grugger. You both did such a good job. I figured you both could have coats. And he's like, anyway, countdown's good to go. I'm going to go leave and do some more fiddling. But should be fine. And then he leaves, and then Grugger's like, you know what? I'm tired of this guy. Everything's set up to blow up the planet. We don't need him anymore. So, fuck him. And he's like, orders that Megalos be caught. Brodadak also, by the way, is very excited because now he has two coats. But they catch Megalos, and the doctor sees this happen. He's like, phew, that was a close one. And turns around, and then he gets caught.
So I just bring both of them into the same cell.
Yeah, they're thrown onto the Gastak ship. And then they have their a bit of a chat, and, you know, he's like, I'm evil. And the doctor's like, that's cool.
Like, no shit.
And he's like, but you might want to try to stop them or something, because I inverted everything. So it's not going to blow up Tygella. It's going to blow up this planet. It's going to destroy everything. So it'll take you with it unless you go stop it.
It's like you, me, all of it.
Meanwhile, like, Diedrix and Romana and K-9 are like, making their way to the ship to take out some guards, and K-9 burns into the ship, and then they try to capture Megalos, but he, like, boogers out of the Earthling. He leaves the Earthling's body, and then he's just, like, this goop, this big boogery goop.
Yeah.
Just, like, slushing across
kind of,
the
He kind of Alex floor. Max out of the place, but if Alex Max was made out of boogers.
It's less liquidy, and it's more just, like, slimy.
Oh, yuck.
And he's making his way back to the screens. Everyone else gets in the TARDIS and leaves. The booger gets back into the cactus. And then is like, stop pressing. Don't press those buttons. And then they do. And the planet explodes. And then everybody's back on the surface of Tygella. And everything's fine now? They're like doing some horticulture. And they're just like, it'll be fine eventually. Everything seems fine. They lost their source of power. They don't have the dodecahedron anymore.
Yes.
But they're just like, things will be fine. I don't know how this was resolved. They just say, things are fine now, or they're going to be. There was no solution proposed or even said.
There's no solution between the conflict of science versus religion. There's no resolution to the conflict of how are we going to power our city. The only resolution is like, well, killed bad guy's cactus. Dead.
It's a little bizarre.
And then, like, the human gets, like, the weirdest, like, comedy bit.
Well, before that happens, they do get a call saying they need to leave because Gallifrey is calling for them, which I assume will lead into the next serial.
Yes.
And they're like, well, we'll drop you off on our way, the Earthling.
I imagine when I was like, man, they don't utilize, like, Gallifrey and Time Lords enough. And somebody told us, like, oh, you'll eat those words. I wonder if this is that.
Maybe. But yeah, the Earthling says he's afraid he'll be in trouble with his wife because he was supposed to, like, be back home, like, days ago or whatever.
Why is this guy even here? Like, I don't understand.
He needed a human to...
Why did he need a human? Because
he was stuck in
human?
That cactus.
Yeah, but why a human? Like, why specifically an Earthling? Like, where did he even get that Earthling? Why didn't he just...
I mean, he put a call out for it. Maybe just... Earthlings are the most... You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right? Like, it could have just been the, one of those pirate guys. I don't understand why an Earthling was easier.
I don't know.
Anyway, he has to get back to his wife and his lifetime of eating white bread and doing nothing else.
And he's just afraid because he was supposed to be back days ago, and the doctor is like, oh, don't worry, you'll be returned before you left. He's like, what? And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, his reaction is just him being like, what? Time travel? That sounds pretty wacky. Like,
dude, you were a cactus.
This shit happened to him, and he still went back and just talked about, like, fucking taxes at parties. And, like, not about the fact that he was abducted by aliens.
And that he was inhabited by an alien for a while, too.
Right.
But that's it. That's the end of Megalos. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for final thoughts.
Look, we know it's a long time till Doctor Who comes back on the air.
Sorry.
But your friends here at the Earth Station Who podcast are here to help.
That's right. Mike, and Mary will be your guide through this wilderness year with reviews of classic stories, audios, and even some group discussions featuring some special guests.
Join us for new episodes every other week up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
The Earth Station Who podcast, exploring over 50 years of the Doctor Who universe.
And we're back!
Oh, Jesus!
Tony, do you know what time it is?
Yes.
What time is it?
I am aware of what time it is. Correct. Thank you for asking.
What time is it? What segment do we do now?
Don't you know?
Yes, but I want
to... Did you not prep? Are you unaware of
what... I not prep? I'm the only person who preps for this podcast.
Are you unaware of what happens at this point in our podcast and you need me to provide an answer to you because otherwise you would be lost without me in my direction?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's time for final thoughts.
Cool.
Final thoughts!
To be honest, I don't have a lot of thoughts. Like, most of the things I have to say are, like, I liked the new kind of effects that they are trying out here. It's always great to see them, like, acquire new techniques. I liked the costuming. I feel like I've been saying that a lot lately, but it's been really good lately. And a lot of the times on, like, your more sort of, like, basic episodes, it's the thing that stands out. Where you're like, yeah, I've basically seen this plot before, but man, those guys look great. Like, that makeup's cool. That creature looks cool. I wish I had that outfit. I will say, it feels like we've been doing the same thing for a long time. Like, there's a part of me that's, as much as I've enjoyed the Tom Baker era and all the stories that are in it, and as much as I feel like the last couple of seasons have been really strong, I'm, like, itching for something new.
Last episode, it did feel different. It felt...
Yes, and this feels like a return to form that is, frankly, unwelcome. And which isn't to say that it was bad. I think I got, like, a taste of, like, them mixing it up. Like, on a production level, on a storytelling level, they were doing new stuff. And now this felt like any other episode from this era.
See, I liked this episode better than the last episode, though.
I mean, that's fair.
I could follow what was happening.
Yeah.
And it did have more humor in it. Like, yeah. Not a lot, but it did have some. It had more than the last one. And, like, it did return, like, to the visual style that it has been before. It wasn't, like, as crazy visual as, like, the last serial was. But, yeah, I knew what was happening in this one, which is a plus for me.
It has a much more clear plot than the other one. It wasn't throwing quite so much at the wall. But also meant that it was, like, you know, just fine.
Even though it was easy enough to follow, there's still just, like, gaping plot holes.
It just ends and then everyone's like, well, it's fine because it's the end. Goodbye!
You solved nothing! If you could take the plot of this one and put it with the visuals of the last one and also, like, write it just a little bit better,
yeah.
I think it would be perfect.
I think, like, the real weakness of this episode is that it has all a bunch of pieces that it doesn't say anything with. It starts this conflict of science versus religion, but doesn't say anything about that conflict. It just kind of is like, I don't know, just using those pieces because it thinks that's what goes there without being like, oh, I'm trying to tell a story about this. There's no purpose behind anything besides to, like, to be elements of Doctor Who.
The only things that I think sort of work, and it's just because they're fun, not because they're well-written, Goofy Pirates, Cactus.
Shit, the reveal of, like, the cactus being
the bad guy?
The bad guy is so good.
So those work for me just because they're ridiculous.
Yes.
Everything else is just kind of there. And I feel real bad about that because Jaclyn Hill, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and
she's doing a great job.
It's definitely fun to watch her do her thing, like, in any capacity.
She's just, like, sort of, like, smarmy almost. She's sort of, like, smirking evil.
Yeah.
But just, like, you think that's what's happening sort of thing? She's doing a real good job. I've missed her, so I'm very glad she's back. I wish she would have been Barbara, though. I wish they just brought back Barbara. I was about to say, just bring back Barbara, but they can't now.
They could bring back Ian.
They could bring back Ian. I don't know why they won't. Cowards. But yeah.
Go ahead and do some plugs.
We need to plug My Life.
Please.
My Life?
No. Please watch The Unseen World. Go to See Unseen World on any social media. Download the Heartland app on Roku and watch The Unseen World. If you can't find it any other way, if you don't have a Roku, you can watch, I think there's one full episode and a couple of clips on my website. So if you go to tonybheath.com, that's me. There's also a full feed of our podcast on there. If you just would, like, rather listen to it on there and give traffic to my personal website, you do you. I don't know why you'd do that, but I don't know anything about you. Those are my things.
Listen to Burn Noticed, which Burn, is a podcast.
Burn, Noticed, Noticed.
Well, yeah. Burn, Noticed is a podcast by Brie Castellini and Chris Cherry, where they talk about every episode of Burn Noticed. And then our podcast is Burn, Noticed, Noticed, where we talk about every episode of Brie and Chris's show, Burn Noticed. It's not that complicated.
Did you want me to say please keep up?
Yeah, I did.
I know it sounded very aggressive if you don't know that that's like, that's the intro to that show.
That's the intro to that show.
Now they know.
Also, keep an eye out for House of the Son of the Dragon, which is a movie wraparound show that I'm doing. It's hosted by Dracula. I will be playing Dracula. Hopefully that'll be coming out soon. Also, follow us on Instagram?
Yeah, it's just all of our title cards right now.
No, there's other stuff on there.
Joe is very insistent that all of the title cards be on our Instagram.
Well, I mean, I want to share our episodes on there.
Okay.
Also, I think it's great that it's our title cards because it's so tiny in most places. It's nice to just be able to look at the artwork that we make.
That's,
you know,
a very strong word for putting a blue gradient over stills from the show.
Yeah, but sometimes we do interesting stuff. Like, we put Max Headroom's head into the thing from Horror Fang Rock. We put beavers on the side of that one
badgers.
Guy's head. Badgers. Yeah, we put badgers on the side of that one guy's head.
There's one of the really, really early ones. The first time we did it was the Aztecs.
Oh, yeah. We put the doctor's face inside of Ian's helmet.
Yeah.
If you look at the title card for the last episode, I hit a little something on that one as well. Look behind the ESO Network logo. People I've showed it to have not seen it.
He sent both of them to me, and he's like, which one of these should I use as the title card? And I was like, these are the same. Why did you send it to me
twice? So if you missed it, go back and look at the title card for the Leisure Hive. There's a little bonus on that one. And that's Watch Your Ass on Instagram. That's our username. But if you like this episode of the podcast, check out more on watchyourassline.com. Be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. It helps us out by doing iTunes magic.
The more reviews we have, the more iTunes feels like telling people we exist. And that means the more people know that we exist. And that's good for a podcast.
If you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to watchyourassline.com/support, and there you will find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon, and there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like day early episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, bonus episodes, live streams where we watch the episodes with you guys, and we have a Discord server, all sorts of neat stuff. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us, or Blu-ray. We'll mention you on the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check out his website at matthewgolden.net. I'd also like to give a special shout-out to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our theme song.
Thanks, Vince!
You can check out more of their stuff at vincentel.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about Full Circle with returning guest Adam Clegg from Harry Sullivan is an Imbecile.
Nice!
Until then, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Lush, aggressive vegetation.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Thank you.